Jack London to the man on trail.
Go ahead and put it all in.
But I say, kid, won't that make the drink too strong? That is a lot of liquor. Put it in. Who's making this drink?
And Malamute Kid smiled kindly through the clouds of steam. When you've been in the country as long as I have, you will learn that the holidays come only once a year. And without some strong drinks, well, they're like digging for gold and hitting rock.
And that is the truth, approved Big Jim Belden, who had traveled from his mining camp to observe the holidays in Malamute Kid's cabin. Have you forgotten the stuff we gave the Tananas to drink?
I guess I did, replied Malamute Kid. Boys, that was something to see. The whole tribe was ready to fight because of the drinks we gave them. That was before your time, Malamute Kid continued as he turned toward Stanley Prince, a young mining engineer who had been in the country 2 years. There were no white women in the country then, and Mason wanted to get married. Well, Ruth's father was chief of the Tananas, and he objected. The rest of the tribe did, too. But we gave them some really strong drinks. And you should have seen them try to catch us when we ran away with Ruth.
What happened to the girl?
Asked Louis Savoy, the tall French-Canadian, becoming interested. Malamute Kid, who was a good storyteller, proceeded with the rest of the tale.
We reached the Yukon at the right moment. The tribe was only a quarter of an hour behind us, but that saved us. When they arrived, the ice on the river had started to break up and move, and they could not cross. When they finally got into town, everyone was ready for them. Ask Father Ribault here. He married the couple.
The missionary took the pipe he was smoking from his lips and smiled to see that the whole company approved the story. Then, as the first cups of the drink were passed around, Bettles leaped to his feet and began to sing a well-known song. Malamute Kid's drink did its work. The men of the camps and trails felt its warmth. Soon jokes and songs and tales of past adventure were told around the table. They were strangers from a dozen lands, but they drank to the good health and fortune of each and all. Then Malamute Kid arose, cup in hand, and glanced at the window where the frost stood 3 inches thick.
A health to the man on trail this night. May his food be enough. May his dogs keep their legs. May his matches never misfire.
Suddenly they heard the familiar music of the dog whip and the sound of a sled as it stopped in front of the cabin. Conversation ceased while they waited to see what would happen next.
It is someone who knows life on the trail.
Hear how he cares for his dogs first, and then himself, whispered Malamute Kid to Prince. They listened to the harks of pain which told their practiced ears that the stranger was beating back their dogs while he fed his own. Then came the expected knock, sharp and confident. The stranger entered. Blinded for a moment by the light, he hesitated at the door. He made a handsome picture in his warm clothing of wool and fur. He stood 6 feet 2 or 3 inches tall. His face was pink from the cold, and his hair was frosted with ice. On a belt outside his jacket, he wore 2 guns and a hunting knife. In addition, he carried a dog whip and another gun. As he came forward into the room, they could see that he was very tired. There was a moment when no one spoke. Then his greeting.
What cheer, my lads?
Put them at ease. In the next instant, Malamute Kid and he had grasped hands. Although the two men had never met, each had heard of the other and recognized the other at once. The stranger was introduced all around, and a cup of liquor was forced upon him before he could explain his presence.
"How long since that sled with 3 men and 8 dogs passed?"
he asked.
"About 2 days ahead. Are you trying to catch them?"
"Yes, they have my team. They stole them from under my nose. But I have gained 2 days already. I will find them soon.
Do you think they will give you a fight?
Asked Belden, to keep the conversation going. Malamute Kid already had the coffee pot on the stove and was busy cooking some meat. Answering the question, the stranger pointed to his guns.
When did you leave Dawson?
12 o'clock.
Last night?
Belden asked.
Today.
A murmur of surprise spread around the circle, and it was with good reason. It was then exactly midnight, and traveling over 75 miles of rough river trail was an unusual accomplishment in 12 hours. But soon they began talking of other things, and the young stranger sat down to eat. As he did so, Malamute Kid studied his face. He was not long in deciding that it was a fair and honest face, and that he liked it. It was still young, but the lines on it had been firmly traced by much work. His blue eyes were calm when resting, but they gave the promise of a hard, steel-like shine when called into action. The lower part of his face had a firmness that showed an unyielding character. The qualities of the lion could be seen there. But there was no lack of a kind of softness which indicated that emotions were part of his nature.
"So that's how my wife and I got married," said Belden,
concluding the exciting tale of his wedding.
"Are there any children waiting for you at home?"
asked the stranger, joining the talk again.
"No. My wife died before any came. That is why I am here."
Belden tried to light his pipe, not noticing that he had already done so. He was thinking of the past. Then he turned to the stranger. His face brightened somewhat as he said,
"How about you? Are you a married man?"
As a reply, the stranger opened his watch and handed it to Belden. He examined the inside of the watch carefully and admired its contents quietly. Then he handed it to Louise Savoy, exclaiming softly. He showed it to Prince, too. As he did so, they noticed that his hands trembled and his eyes took on a strange softness. And so it went from hand to hand, the picture of a woman with a baby at the breast. Those who had not yet seen the watch case were most curious. Those who had seen it became silent and thoughtful. They could face famine or quick death, but the picture of a woman and child made women and children of them all.
"I've never seen the child. He is a boy, and 2 years old," said the stranger as his treasure was returned to him.
For a moment he gazed upon it. Then he closed the case and turned away, but not quickly enough to hide the tears. Malamute Kid led him to a bed and told him to get some sleep.
"Call me at 4 o'clock in the morning. Don't fail me,"
were his last words. A moment later, he was breathing heavily in sleep.
"My God, he is a brave one," Prince remarked. 3 hours of sleep after 75 miles with the dogs. And then he plans to return to the trail again. Who is he, Kid?"
"Jack Westendale. He's been here almost 3 years with nothing to reward him except being known as a good worker. He's had much bad luck, too. I never knew him, but Sitka Charlie told me about him. It seems unfair that a man with a sweet young wife like his should be wasting his years in this wild place. His problem is that he won't accept defeat. He's had a grubstake twice, but lost it both times."
Here the talk was interrupted by Bettles. The effect of the stranger had begun to wear away, and soon the merriment had started again. Malamute Kid alone seemed unable to forget the stranger and cast many an anxious look at his watch. Once he put on his mittens and cap, and, leaving the cabin, went out to his cache. Nor could he wait until the hour that had been set by the stranger. He was a quarter of an hour early in waking his guest. The young fellow had become quite stiff because of his long hours on the trail, and it was necessary to rub his body and his legs to bring him to his feet.
He walked painfully out of the cabin to find his dogs already harnessed and everything ready for the start. The company wished him good luck and a short hunt for his enemies, while Father Roubaud hurriedly blessed him. Then everyone ran quickly to the cabin, because it is not good to face such cold with naked ears and hands. They become frozen within moments. Malamute Kid went with him to the main trail, and there, grasping his hand firmly, gave him advice.
"You will find 100 pounds of fish eggs on the sled," he said. "The dogs will go as far on that as with 150 pounds of fish. You can't get dog food at Pelly, as you probably expected."
The stranger looked surprised, but he did not interrupt.
"You can't get any food for dog or man until you come to the town of Five Fingers. And that is 200 miles away. Be careful to avoid open water on the 30-mile river."
"How did you know the truth about me? Surely the news can't have traveled ahead of me already."
"I don't know it, and what's more, I don't want to know it. But you never owned that team you were following. Sitka Charlie sold it to those people last spring. But he told me you were a good man once, and I believe him. I've seen your face. I like it. And I have seen... Ah, hell, start moving for the sake of that wife of yours, will you?"
Here the kid took off his mittens and pulled out his money. "No, I don't need it." And the tears began to freeze on his face as he grasped Malamute Kid's hand.
"Then don't spare the dogs. Cut them out of the harnesses as fast as they drop. Buy dogs and think that they are cheap at $10 a pound. You can get them at Five Fingers, Little Salmon, and Hootalingua. And don't get your feet wet," was his parting advice. "Keep traveling until it gets too cold, then build a fire and change your socks."
No more than a quarter of an hour had passed when the sound of sled bells announced new arrivals. The door opened and a policeman of the Northwest Territory entered. He was followed by 2 dog drivers. Like Westendale, they carried many guns and were very tired. The drivers had been born to the trail and endured it easily, but the young policeman could go no further.
"When did Westendale leave?" he asked. "Did he stop here?"
The question was unnecessary because the tracks in the snow told their own tale too well. Malamute Kid had given Belden a knowing look. Belden began to realize what the true situation was and answered accordingly.
"Oh, he left a long time ago."
"Come, my man, tell me," the policeman ordered. "You seem to want him very badly. Did he have some trouble down in Dawson?"
"He stole $40,000 from Harry McFarland's gambling house. Who is to stop him from leaving the country if we don't catch him? When did he leave?"
Every eye hid its excitement, because Malamute Kid had shown them how to act. The young officer met with unknowing faces on every side. Walking toward Prince, he asked the same question. Prince gave him an indefinite reply concerning the condition of the trail. Then the policeman saw Father Roubaud, who could not lie.
"A quarter of an hour ago," the missionary answered. "But he had 4 hours of rest for himself and his dogs." "A quarter of an hour, and he is fresh! My God!"
The unhappy fellow sat down, half fainting because of his own tired state. He murmured that he had come from Dawson in 10 hours and the dogs could travel no further. Malamute Kid forced him to drink a cup of the liquor. Then the policeman turned toward the door, ordering the dog drivers to follow. But the drivers did not want to leave the warmth and the promise of rest. They objected strongly. The kid could understand the strange language they spoke and followed their words anxiously. They insisted that the dogs were too tired and that it would be necessary to shoot 2 of them before the first mile had been traveled. They said it would be better for everyone to rest.
"Would you lend me 5 dogs? The policeman asked, speaking to Malamute Kid.
But the kid shook his head, meaning no.
I will sign a note of payment for you in the name of the chief of police. I have the authority to do so.
Again, the kid refused, silently.
Then, I must take your dogs in the name of the law.
Smiling, the kid glanced at his stock of guns. The policeman, realizing his lack of power, turned toward the door. The dog drivers still objected, and he spoke to them fiercely, calling them women and dogs. The older driver rose to his feet. With a curse, he promised that he would travel fast. He would travel so fast, he added, that the policeman's legs would break. Then he threatened that he would happily plant him in the snow. The young policeman walked steadily to the door, displaying a freshness that he did not possess. But they all knew and admired his proud effort. Covered with frost, the dogs were sleeping in the snow. It was almost impossible to force them to stand. The tired animals cried as they were whipped, because the dog drivers were angry and cruel. Not until Babette, the leader dog, was cut from the harness, could they load the sled and start traveling.
"He lied!
Worse than an Indian! He is no good!"
It was easy to see that the men were angry. First, because they had been fooled by Westendale, and second, they knew the principles by which men lived in the Northland, and honesty was the chief of these.
"And to think that we helped him, after knowing what he had done!"
All eyes turned toward Malamute Kid, who rose from the corner where he had been comforting Babette. He silently emptied the bowl for a final drink.
"It is a cold night, boys, a very cold night,"
was what he said as he began to defend himself.
"You have all traveled the trail, and know how difficult it is. Don't judge a man without knowing his whole story. You have only heard one side. A better man than Jack Westendale never ate from the same pot with you and me. Last year he gave his whole earnings, $40,000, to Joe Castrell to buy a share in a mining company for him. Today, he would be a rich man. But while he stayed behind at Circle City to help his sick companion, what did Castrell do? He went to McFarland's and lost all the money by gambling. They found him dead in the snow the next day, and Jack had made his plans to leave this winter, to join his wife and the boy he had never seen. You'll notice that he took exactly what Castrell lost, $40,000. He will be out of the country soon. And what are you going to do about it?"
The kid glanced around the circle of his judges. He noted the softening of their faces, then raised his cup high.
"So, a health to the man on the trail this night. May his food be enough. May his dogs keep their legs. May his matches never misfire. God help him. Good fortune go with him. And
bad luck follow the Northwest Police,"
cried Bettles to the crash of the empty cups.